This episode of the Shipping Notes, 66 years ago this week, SS Ideal X set sail with the first load of intermodal containers. We look at how a truck driver changed ocean shipping forever. I'm your host, Sal Mercadlan, and welcome to this episode of the Shipping Notes, short little snippets of shipping news and history, a little different than what we typically do on what's going on with shipping. So this week, 66 years ago, the SS Ideal X, a ship owned by Malcolm McLean, set sail from Newark, New Jersey for Houston, Texas. What made this ship unique is she was loaded with 58 35-foot containers, the very first successful intermodal shipment by sea of modular containers. So we're going to take a look at the history of Sealand, Malcolm McLean, and how this truck driver from Maxton, North Carolina, changed the face of global shipping. So this presentation is based on a series of articles done by FreightWaves Classics, a great series that's done that delves into the archive of the old American shipper, which FreightWaves controls, and they publish these articles, and I'll have the links in the show notes below. So Malcolm McLean is an unlikely source to change ocean shipping. Born in Maxton, North Carolina, which is in rural Robeson County, North Carolina, it's still rural to this day, I'm 50 miles from it. He set out to really radically change, not so much ocean shipping, but the movement of cargo. And that's the interesting aspect about McLean. McLean was always seen as an outsider in the world of ocean shipping. But 66 years ago, when Ideal X sailed from Newark, New Jersey on April 26th of 1956, it forever changed things. Now, McLean was born in 1913, and he went to high school, didn't have enough money to attend college. It's the middle of the Great Depression. And in 1935, he bought a used truck. And partnering up with his family, they formed basically McLean Trucking. And with McLean Trucking, he eventually did jobs, everything from hauling dirt for the WPA to hauling agricultural materials for local farmers. And by 1940, he had basically grew his business into a fleet of about 30 trucks. And again, the trucks they're using at this time were very, smaller trucks, typically the large wheel trucks, but you started seeing the development of larger van type trucks at this time. But it was in 1937 when McLean, who himself drove the trucks, he was not a guy who sat in the office and did the paperwork. He liked to get out and drive trucks. But it was in 1937 when he was hauling a load of cotton bales up to New Jersey that he realized that there was issues with the movement of goods. The traditional trucks had to sit and wait in some cases for hours or even days to offload their cargo because that had to deal with the way they move cargo back then, which was referred to as break bulk. You would move the entities in these kind of modular movements. Basically every piece of cargo was individually had to be offloaded off a ship or off a truck onto pallets or into cargo netting, and then loaded and packed into a ship, locked and braced. It took days, if not weeks, to do this. And the Army actually, during this period of time, developed something called the Connex Box, which was basically the Container Express. But these were smaller. They were almost like pallets with sides and a lid on them. But they were not modular. In other words, you couldn't load them just onto the back of a truck. You had to load them into a truck. And by about this period of time, McLean realized that there were issues at play here. By the 1950s, he owned the fifth largest trucking firm in America, 1,750 trucks, 37 terminals. It was massive. But he realized that the trucking industry was changing. The Interstate Commerce Commission was putting more and more rules on interstate movement of trucks. There was the development of the interstate highway system, which was going to radically change interior trucking within the United States. And he thought a way to bypass the ICC, the Interstate Commerce Commission, and even the interstate highway system was to be able to load cargo into these new modular containers. And so working with an engineer, he basically decides to sell McLean Trucking, which he does in 1955 for about $6 million, hires Keith Tetlinger, an engineer, to help him design a new type of container. What he calls a van trailer initially is basically what they call it, or a trailer van, depends on the pieces of literature you see. And what he's able to do then is basically avoid the ICC, and he buys a shipping firm for $7 million, Pan Atlantic, with two tankers. And he takes the first tanker in this, and he decides to basically begin the modification for it. And he's going to turn it into not a pure container ship, because that wasn't going to be profitable enough for him. He was a little worried about this technology. So he took this tanker, what was the SS Potrero Hills, a T2 tanker built during World War II, renames it the Ideal X. Ideal is the ideal form of transportation, and X stood for experimental. And on the or above the main deck, which has all the piping system for the oil tanks, he installed this false decking, what's called Meccano decking. It was used in World War II. A lot of tankers during World War II transported over deck cargo. A lot of it was planes, actually. A lot of planes were moved on the decks, big, huge flat areas. You would tie them down. But onto this Meccano decking, they would load these containers. Now, the reason McLean is using an oil tanker is very simple. When the ship sails from Houston, Texas to Newark, it's loaded with oil. It has cargo on board. When it's sailing from Newark back to Houston, it's empty. It's not making money on the return voyage. Basically, on a tanker, you're making all your money on a single voyage. You're not returning with anything. So McLean's idea is, well, we'll load the deck here with these 35-foot vans. And that's what he comes up with. He initially loads 58 35-foot vans. And what he determines is the cost in movement per ton drops significantly. So he estimated that the cost to ship a ton of cargo from Newark to Houston previous to this was $5.83 a ton. He figures, based on his new containers, now remember, these containers are unique because one of the things you can do is load them at a site, seal them, lock them. You don't have to open them up again. So there's no five-finger discount at the pier, on the ship. All the cargo you load in there will be there when the cargo arrives. And more importantly, it's very efficient. It takes just less than a day to put the 58 containers on board Ideal X. Whereas if you're loading this type of cargo in a break bulk, it could take days, if not weeks, to do it. He's able to load this and ship the cargo for a whopping 16 cents a ton. That is a 36 times decrease in the amount of transportation cost. And he's able to sail this ship down. And as he's making the sailing, he's already booking the next cargoes. And Ideal X and its sister ship start operating on this Port Newark to Houston run, bringing cargo down directly into Texas. And a lot of cargo that's coming in here is being built, manufactured within the New York metropolitan area, loaded in this containers stuff. This is including goods that are coming in from overseas and then being shipped down Texas. Remember, the interstate highway system, this is 1956, not up and full running yet. It takes a long time to move cargo in the trucks that were available at the time. This was a much more efficient system. But there was also problems with this system because it bypassed stevedores, port fees. There was a lot of issues. You needed cranes to offload these containers. And so you needed a lot of elements to this. Plus, they couldn't really return loaded containers from Houston back up to New Jersey. They could bring the empty ones, but not any loaded ones because of the carriage rules that were in place about carrying cargo on a loaded oil tanker. But the system proves itself to work, and McLean at Pan Atlantic begins the modification of ships into true container ships. This is Gateway City. The first true container ship designed as such. It has a gantry crane on board so it can offload its own cranes. You can see the gantry cranes on the aft end here. They roll along tracks on the deck. They straddle the containers, pick them up, and offload them either on the port or starboard side. The ship operated on a route from New York to Florida to Texas, big loop, and they would move. Now, understand, containerization takes a little bit of time to sell off, you need a lot of boxes. You need about three boxes for every box you're selling, because you need to be offloading a box, you need to be loading a box, and then you need another box being loaded somewhere and another box being offloaded somewhere. So you needed a big supply of boxes, but these are Sealand boxes. Hence, you see the Sealand symbol, which is the new name of the company that Malcolm McLean implements. And very quickly, the system grows. There's some hesitation in some places about it, but within the United States, you start seeing it. By 1963, a 101-acre facility is developed at Port Newark in Elizabeth, New Jersey. You start seeing the introduction by 1966 in a service to Europe, from New York to Germany to the Netherlands to Scotland. And then really the big thing for McLean is getting this system sold to the U.S. military. In 1965-66, there's a huge backlog of 122 ships waiting to offload in Vietnam. McLean sends three of his top executives to go meet with the Army Material Command and tells him, listen, we can clear the backlog with 11 container ships. Initially seven, upgrades it to 11 later on. And he developed container facilities at Da Nang, Cam Ranh, and stops at Subic Bay, Okinawa, Japan. And on the return voyage, to make some money, he's able to stop in Japan and to load up with electronics and start bringing it back. And what you see is the growth of Sealand. By the 1970s, they own 27,000 containers, 36 ships, operate in 30 different ports around the world. And McLean really becomes the face of containerization. In 1969, he sells the company to R.J. Reynolds for $530 million. He gets $160 million himself in cash and stock options. He's put on the board of directors. And Sealand is the preeminent container shipping firm in the world. U.S. flagged, U.S. owned. It's absolutely phenomenal. However, a series of missteps by McLean leads to his departure from the firm. In 1973, he develops a class of ships called the SL7s. These are high-speed vessels, 33 knots, can carry over 1,000 containers. Which were ideal to move containers efficiently across the Atlantic. He has these ships built overseas in European yards. They don't have to be American built because they're not operating in the coastwise trade. However, they are fuel guzzlers, about 6 barrels of fuel a mile. Unfortunately, the timing of these ships is poor. They enter at the beginning of the 1970s when fuel is cheap, but then you have the oil embargo, OPEC, and fuel prices go through the roof. And the ships have to slow down. They're not very efficient. And what eventually happens here is that McLean will eventually resign from Sealand in 1977. In 1984, Sealand is spun off from R.J. Reynolds. And 2 years later, in 86, it's bought by CSX, the railway firm. McLean, at this point, had moved over to U.S. lines. But because of another misstep in a plan with him, he designs a series of vessels called Econo ships. These are ships designed for a round the world voyage. I'll feature US lines in a separate video. But that system fails because of the slow nature of the ship and because of a rival foreign shipping firm that challenges US lines named Evergreen out of Taiwan. In 1986, CSX owns the company, but in 1999, they sell it off to Maersk Lines. Maersk folds it into Maersk Sealand, what is then becomes the largest container liner in the world. And in 2006, they eliminate the Maersk. Maersk eliminates the Sealand moniker from their ships, meaning Sealand is no more. McLean is recognized for his greatness late in his life. He dies in 2001 at the age of 87. But in retrospects of the 20th century, he's identified by entities like Harvard University as one of the 100 most influential Americans in the field of business. His containerization concept of moving cargo from loading onto trucks, onto rail, to ships, the invention of the corner strength points and locking systems, the intermodal nature of ocean shipping all go back to a truck driver sitting there waiting to offload a load of cotton in New York, New Jersey in 1937. And it always makes me wonder, what's the next truck driver thinking about right now, waiting in a line to load containers in the port of New York, New Jersey, LA, Long Beach, or any port around the world today? What's the next great invention? Because this invention didn't come from a shipping magnate. It didn't come from a guy traditionally reared in ocean shipping. It came from somebody who hauled cargo. Hope you enjoyed the episode. And if you did, please subscribe, hit the bell so you'll be alerted about new videos as they come out. Give it a thumbs up, share it across social media. And if you can, join our Patreon page. That helps support the channel and bring videos like this to you. Until our next episode, Sal, signing off.